3-digit box number.
Hi, this is Susan.
Hi, are we on?
I think so. Who else is joined?
People are star six in themselves.
Yeah.
So I was just saying we're gonna do the first maybe 20 minutes sort of a Terry Gross interview with Catherine. And Carrie's gonna pepper some questions, and I'll pop in, and Susan as well. And then we're gonna open up the forum to everyone. We just want to give some background for Catherine and the work that she does, and get some questions going to get people familiar with her work, and then I'm sure everyone will have a lot of questions. So I think we're about 3 minutes after. Carrie, you just want to start with Catherine doing an introduction, and then you can take
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is, in case anybody is not up to date on this, call is called Energy as Intuitive Information, and we're joined today by Catherine McCleary. And Catherine, can you give us an overview of who you are and what you do?
I can try. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in California, and I work with a number of people every week, maybe 20 to 30, in a traditional therapy setting. I have an office, and people come and sit in a room with me, and any number of things can happen depending on what the person sitting with me is asking for, overtly or subtly. And what I'm doing, I suppose, could be looked at in two ways. One, I'm working overtly with a situation that's brought the person to my office, the person who's wanting therapy or help or understanding of something in themselves or a relationship. And underneath, there's a large current flow energy reality that I'm tuning into that gives me a lot of information about the person, and a lot of the information I get is through this and not through the words that they say.
So I think someone just got on and must be on a cell phone. So can everyone do star six to mute themselves?
Jim got on, he's on a star phone, and I will star six myself.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Did that work?
Nope.
It didn't work? Oh, no, I was afraid of that. Oh,
yeah,
no.
I've just found out that sometimes it's only the presentation lines, but most cell phones or phones, this is Susan, by the way, should have a mute function on them. You know, you're...
Well, is it distracting? If so, I'll get off the call.
It's quiet right now.
Okay, good.
Maybe put your thumb over the speaker part.
I could turn on B96 really loud.
Okay.
How many? Is there a lot of people on the call?
Yeah, there's a number.
Good.
And we're taking time now to ask Catherine McCleary some questions and let her describe what she does. So take it away again, Catherine.
So you want me to tell you, give you, as different things happen depending upon who's with me, but basically what I'm doing is opening up all of my intuitive senses, which could be going back to the four intuitive styles that the speaker last month was talking about, intuitive seeing, intuitive hearing, intuitive feeling, and intuitive knowing. These are all, I guess, a part of it. But it's a sensing that involves connecting with what is coming out of the person that's sitting across from me, that the emanations or the, maybe it's an electromagnetic field, or some people call it subtle energy. And in that is just a tremendous amount of emotional information for me, or even sometimes physical information, historic information. I'll sometimes get a real sense of, say, a stuck energy around relationship with mother or father, and it gives me a sense of where to go with that person.
How do you use that information with your clients?
You know, I can't hear you because of the sound of the...
Okay, I'm gonna interject and just...
go for it.
If we can't... Jim, is that you on a cell phone?
I am on a cell phone.
I think it might be you, because when you talk, it sort of goes away. Is there any way you can cover the mouthpiece with the phone or something?
I'm covering it with my whole hand when I... Now, do you hear a noise now?
A little bit.
Not quite as great. There.
Okay. It could have been. Sometimes it covers the thing with my whole hand. Sorry to interrupt.
That's
if it's distracting again, I will leave. Sorry. I apologize.
No worries.
So, Catherine, I had asked, how do you use this information in service of your clients?
I use what I pick up to give me a really full sense of who they are, who that person is that's sitting with me. It allows me to have access to using an energy that flows through me to connect in a more healing way with them. It's very difficult to put into words.
I'm actually wondering, how did you discover this?
I think when I was very young, when I was very small, I realized I had an experience with my parents where I realized that I could see what they were thinking and what they were feeling. I was reading their energy, which was very different from the words that were coming out of their mouth. And I began to understand that there were many levels of reality, and that the one that was being presented to me by them was not all that was going on.
Yep. And have you always been comfortable with this?
Sometimes I haven't, because it took me a while, particularly when I first started working, to separate out my feelings from the feelings that were coming to me over the subtle energy line. So if a very angry person would walk into the room, I would be filled with an angry energy, and I would wonder, am I angry? And it took me a while to be able to hold on to my energy and my internal reality and see what was coming from the other person, because in a way it's like diving into a swimming pool, and you're both in the same water, and it's hard to know where you end and the other person begins. So in this way, it's really important to maintain impeccable boundaries, or as close to that as I can get, so
yeah,
that I don't mix up my personal self with what's coming from that person.
Excuse me, this is Mary. I'm finding the cell phone noise really distracting. I can't hear Catherine.
Sorry.
So could Catherine, could you speak up? Thank you.
Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Did you hear anything of what I just said?
Yes, I did, and I'm so interested in what you have to say, and I'm so sorry the other person had to drop off, but I really want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, that does make it easier to talk.
Thank you.
So I was saying that it's difficult to separate my energy from the other person's energy sometimes, and it was very hard at first when I decided to put myself in this position with the label therapist on it, and to know if someone is feeling something really intensely, whether it's me or them, and to hold my own and to relate to what's coming out of them and know that it's theirs and not mine.
How did you strengthen that? Like the boundary, or how did you distinguish it?
That's a really good question. I guess the answer, as closely as I can say it, is over time, with intention and really looking very honestly inside myself, I was able to see what was my stuff and what was theirs. And sometimes somebody else's pain will resonate with pain that is mine. And then I have to be really careful not to lose my focus on them and have my own issue come up. So it's a hard place to be, in a way. You have to be really committed to your own self-inquiry and your own truth, your own emotional health and truth.
I'm so struck by your obvious diligence to your commitment. Now, so what, I'm actually wondering, like, what do you think the gem is that you have to offer us here today?
Well, that's a hard question to answer.
Feel free to just say whatever your is calling you.
Well, first, I would like to say that it's important that we trust this very real level of reality. And I know that some scientists, physicists especially, have a hard time when we use the word energy to describe or refer to this dimension of human interaction, or even this human reality. It's not even just human. I mean, there's energy that comes off of trees and animals and inanimate things, even, because they become imbued. Like a house will have an energy because of the people that are in it. A place, a space will have an energy. Like if you've ever walked on a battlefield from the Civil War, there's an energy that's held in the land of all the death and destruction that's gone on there, and you can feel it. Mm-hmm. So this energy dimension is very real, and I think we need to honor that and trust our intuition when something feels right or wrong or dangerous, or when someone's needing help and we can show up in a way. We can be sensitive to all of that, and it can inform our actions and our relationships. So I think it's really important to admit to ourselves, and I mean, we don't necessarily have to talk about it with people that are skeptical or you know, would think that we're, some people think that all this is crazy, you know, really, and they don't want to know, but that doesn't mean that it's not happening anyway. So if we're sensitive to this, it can inform our behavior. I think that that's really important to remember, especially for really intuitive people.
Yeah, and I'm actually thinking that this may be a good time to open up the floor to questions, unless you have something.
This is Susan. I'd like to request that everybody speak up a little bit. Both of you are pretty quiet.
Oh,
so if you could maybe raise your voice a little bit.
Can you hear me?
You get real quiet at times, both of you. I think.
Well, maybe it's my phone.
Because
it feels like I'm yelling.
Well, Catherine and Terry particularly, I think sometimes what I've noticed is when we get into a tender place, our voice gets really soft, and what we, I guess I just want you to be aware that it's going to be, it sounds like it's going to be a really, we're going to be in a lot of tender places in this call. That's what I get. This is cool. And just asking people to make sure you keep your voice up. Thanks.
So, Carrie, this is Tim, and I have a couple of questions for Catherine.
Go for it.
Sort of a line of questioning, because I've been the recipient of Catherine's work, and I, sitting on, you know, across in the other chair from Catherine, I've moved to some really stunning and amazing places, being held by her energy. And so, Catherine, we've talked about, we don't really talk much about how you do this, but we've talked about it, you know, a couple of times. And one thing that that you said then was that you hold the other person, or you sort of envelop them in this love. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking about that, because yeah, this is more the process of what happens. Someone comes and sits in the chair, and the first thing that I do is create a space, hopefully a safe space, because people won't open unless they feel safe. And I feel energy coming in the top of my head and moving out through my heart and my hands, sometimes my face, and it moves to the other person, and there's kind of an egg shape all around them, above their head and around their body and under their feet. And then I just hold that space for them to be safe and feel loved and appreciated and accepted and acknowledged, validated, all those things. And then I just ask for that person to be as open and real as they can be, and in the safety that's created by that energy, which I can't say is my energy. It's an energy that I can partake in or use or channel. It's hard to know the right word exactly. Run it through me. There are lots of words for it. Chi or prana or mana. It's there. It's all around us, and we can access it, and it's in the breath. So that's why breath work is so powerful. And I do a lot of deep breathing while I'm working. Kind of sneaky deep breathing, because I don't want people to get distracted. But I want the energy to be available to that person too, and for them to trust their own energetic reality.
Is there anything else that's happening or that you're allowing sort of at that moment? Because I've been with you, so I've seen you do this, and it seems like you do this very quickly. Sort of when someone comes to you and sits down, I know that you sort of take a deep breath and we're quiet for maybe, you know, 10 seconds. And I get the sense that, and I love that you're allowing us to go on this journey with you, of you taking what you do and putting it into words. And there's sort of a beginner's mind here on your part, too, which is just fabulous for us to be a part of.
Is this making any sense at all?
I know people are on mute, but I'm going to say yes.
people can't talk now because they're on mute.
But I'm sure that there are lots of questions out there.
Okay.
So I know that you're sort of doing... you're doing something very quickly that is, it seems like you're allowing something to be, and you're allowing yourself to be, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of cerebral mind or thought going on here.
Mm-mm. No, that's accurate, Kim. It's like it's a reading. It's a sensing. It's a seeing reality at that level and moving with it, trusting it. That's the important thing, is trusting it.
So that was the line of my question. If people want to take themselves off mute and ask Catherine some questions, please do that.
Yeah, I'd actually, this is Carrie, I'd like to lead in with one if people bring themselves in, and we invite your questions now. How did you heighten your level of trust in this?
This is the answer that came up right now was through prayer, but it's not prayer like going to a particular religion. It was more asking. I'm very interested in healing and in how people move beyond their emotional pain or the effects of trauma in the body. And I know a lot of research into the brain right now is showing that people get stuck in patterns of brain function. And I think energy can influence this. So there was a time about 10 years ago where I started asking Spirit to show me how I could be of deeper service to people who were really hurt. How could I offer more in less time so that people could come and feel better more quickly, that they wouldn't be in therapy for 15 years to deal with something catastrophic like a rape or, witnessing the murder of a parent or something really terrible that happens to people. Or having murdered someone. Yeah, I have worked with some really very hurt people. And the instructions that I get with through kind of a, I guess, an inner guidance or some sense that comes to me that's greater than myself, my instructions were to listen very, very carefully and to trust, just to trust the process. Trust that by loving the person and joining with them and giving them permission to be as full and healthy as they could be, that was a big part of it. There's some permission here that is part of what's happening when someone's sitting with me. Permission to be more fully connected with one's own healing potential, with the part of the mind or the psyche or the heart, I don't know that we could even put a word on it, in each person that is timeless and whole and can know, can move beyond traumas and the beliefs that we get as a result of those traumas, like life is dangerous or I am bad.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to invite other people in. What are your questions for Catherine? Don't all speak at once.
It's *6 to unmute yourself also.
Catherine, this is Susan. I'm going to wait. Can you hear me, Catherine?
Yes.
Great. My question is, I hear a lot about your senses in here, really a lot of using your senses, and I'm wondering how you have practiced or honed your senses to be able to, gather more, intuitive energy.
I think some of it is just sitting every day for 6, 7, 8, sometimes 9 hours, which I do 4 days a week, maybe 48 weeks a year for 25 years. I'm sitting, being with. And after a while, things just begin to become more clear through the practice of sitting. It is a form of meditation. If we use, as a definition of meditation, one-pointed awareness. So I try to focus all of my attention on the other person.
Great.
And that through that focus and gathering of information, that this trust in sensing and skill in sensing has grown.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like what you're talking about is what at CTI we talk about as our level 2 and level 3. Level 1 is, you know, paying attention to yourself and what's going on for yourself. Level 2 is really being over there with the other person. And level 3 is what's going on in your environment, you know, what's sort of in the air.
Uh-huh, right.
And it sounds like what you're saying is you've done a lot of level 2 and what in our world we call level 2 and 3, curiosity or attention.
What was that last thing you said about level 3?
That you've done a lot of, you know, being over there with the other person, what we call our level 2, and level 3 being aware of the environment. Seems like you've done a lot. That's part of what you've done to increase your sensitivity.
Right, the environment, it's what I just was seeing as you said that was, if you put someone, two people in a room, each two people will create a certain energy environment. You know, there's maybe a color to it or a tone. So it's, I guess it's being, what I'm doing is sensing the color that we make when we're sitting in the room together. And it's different. It's different for each person. And not everyone is receptive to the work that I do. And some people don't come back because they're looking for something else. And that's fine, too.
Catherine, this is Kim. You mentioned that energy in the room can create a tone or a color. Is that... what do you pick up? What do you see? What do you feel? What do you hear? Do you see colors?
Mm-hmm. Not exactly. I can see when a person is going to cry before they, a little while before they cry.
And what do you see?
Oh,
you
Kim. This is so hard to discuss.
That's good. You've never done this before.
I haven't. This is so new for me. I hope everybody isn't, like, bored to tears. I'm feeling when somebody's about to cry that the air changes.
Mm.
The air changes consistency.
Mm.
And then I get a feeling in my body. It's like a softening and kind of a like a prickly feeling. I mean, not bad. Not a chill, but it's just a certain tone. And when somebody's angry, there's another feeling, and it's more hot. And I feel it in a different place in my body. I'm very sensitive to the emotions of other people, and often I'll feel their feelings even when they're not. So I've learned not to say, oh, I see you're feeling blah, because that can threaten someone. So if I feel something and the person's not feeling it, then I try to direct them to a place where they can see it and feel it and first be safe and then see it and feel it. And be open to whatever's the block to feeling it.
Catherine, this is Carrie. I had a question about working with people in person versus working with people on the phone. As coaches, often we're working with people on the phone. Do you have a sense of this energy over the phone, or is it just in person for you?
I can work on the phone, but I prefer not to, because that's such a great question. If I don't have the person right there in the room with me, I don't get as much information. We don't have that shared energetic field. The visuals aren't there, and then the emanations from the other person's body don't hit my body, so that I don't have as much information. But I have worked on the phone. It's okay. It's with people who have been my clients and then have moved away and want to keep connected. So I have a sense of their body reality, and we can work, continue to work, but it's not the same. It's not as immediate or as full an experience for me.
I'm wondering, for those of us who do work primarily over the phone, do you have any, bits of advice or tips that you'd give us for honing in on this or feeling it?
Well, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
Do you ever see the people that you work with, or is it entirely on the phone?
I'm sure it ranges differently for different people. For me, it's probably about 50-50. About half of my clients I've never seen.
Okay, so you never have that visual. So when you work with them, do you get a picture in your mind of what they might look like?
Often, yes.
Do they ever send you a photograph of themselves?
There are some times that I have photographs of people, yes.
Do you find that when you have a photograph, you feel more fully connected to the person?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
And that's just for me. I'm wondering about other people who are on the call.
This is Mary. I actually get photos of clients sometimes, but I don't know that there's a distinction between knowing what they look like and not knowing what they look like and what my experience of them is. Sometimes I feel like I can actually still tune in pretty deeply to who they are, whether I know what they look like or not. So that's my experience.
This is Pauline. I wanted to say the visual sometimes gets in the way for me. For instance, when I coach on the phone, I blindfold myself because I don't want the visual distraction of the room that I'm in. It deepens my ability to feel the energy, to feel what's going on with the person.
This is Ada. I was going to say the same thing. I don't blindfold myself, but I sometimes feel the visual distracts me from just hearing all of who they are. I then have a picture in my mind of who they are. You know, when I get a picture, then that somehow alters what I'm hearing and seeing about them.
There are so many different ways to do this. I would never say that how I receive my information is how someone else should receive theirs.
Definitely.
Yeah, and for me, the visual is, or the presence is important, and for others it might be a distraction. But I think that what we're trying to do, or hopefully actually doing, is in the same ballpark. I mean, we're hoping to help people realize their potential and to have clear intention and to trust that they can move through whatever's in their way, you know, so they can accomplish what they want.
Catherine, this is Anna Linda calling from Stockholm, and I would like to ask you, you mentioned before how you guide people. Can you hear me?
Yes.
How you guide people when you are sensing their emotions, but they cannot sense their emotions, and you guide them to a place where they might be connected with their emotion.
Right.
Could you give an example of that process, guiding them to a place where they can actually sense?
Yes, thank you for asking. I use a process that I learned called conscious dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim has done this, and it works quite well for some people. Other people have a hard time with this. But we suspend the rational. It's a form of, a light form of hypnosis in a way. You enter a, your inner reality, and I don't control anything that goes on. I'm just accompanying people and providing the breath work and the focus. You know, it's a series of exercises, or, you know, focus on this, and then, you know, allow the breath to move here in the body, and moving into a non-rational place where we go into dreaming. And I might say, well, I'd like to discuss or talk with a person inside of you who most needs attention right now. And that's one of the places, the entry places. And it's amazing what will come up when people have suspended their cognitive or rational functions. And they will then, perhaps the artist will come up, or the whoever, the part that's feeling lonely or lost or troubled, and then we can dialogue with that person and see what that voice has to say.
Mm. Is this a technique that you have developed, or is it described somewhere?
Probably. The woman who taught me lived in Palo Alto, and this was many years ago that I studied with her, and then I took what I learned, and I have made it my own in a way. So conscious dreaming is not what I call it. That's what I learned.
Uh-huh.
And it was so long ago, to tell you the truth, I can't even remember the person. I mean, I would love to give her credit. She certainly deserves it. But it's something similar to Ericksonian hypnosis. Or guided visualization, only I'm not guiding. And I think in that process, people will say, you know, now you're walking over a field, and now you're doing this, and now you're doing that. But I'm really wanting the person's own inner reality to come out. So I give very minimal instruction or direction.
Mm-hmm. So I can actually, Anna Linda, I can add to that, Ken, because I've been the recipient of Catherine's work in this area, and it's in CTI terms, it is sort of a guided visualization. But I, you know, Catherine said she guides people there, but it's actually less guiding than that. She has, you know, you can hear in her voice that, you know, she, that voice could put anyone in a hypnotic state.
Yes.
And so she takes me so deep inside myself. And one thing that she always says in every instance of this is, she has said, you're going to your safe place. And so I go inside, you know, she does the quieting your mind and let go of the noises and da da da, and the breathing, concentrating on the breathing. And then when I'm at a certain place, and I'm not sure how she knows when I'm there, but she does. And she says, go into your safe place. And so this is all me, and this is all inside of me. And I'm finding my safe place, and I have been inside the middle of a, like a big redwood tree. I've been inside. I've been inside a cocoon, and she tells me, she asks me where I am, and she says it's a safe place, and I'm the only one that can go there. I'm the only one that's allowed there, except by invitation. I can invite other people in, and so I invite her in. And she asks where we are, and I explain, and I am amazed at what detail I can give about what the inside of a cocoon feels like. And she asks me what's going on there. And so she doesn't guide me there. She takes me someplace and then lets me guide her.
Yeah.
And she asks me where I am, and then who's there and what I'm experiencing, and then she dialogues with that person. And it is stunning. And I can tell you, over time, I've gone deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper each time I feel it. So I hope that helps.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that so much, Kim, because it's hard to describe, for me to describe what's going on the other end. So, because I only have my perception of it. So that was really nice. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I have a question. This is Ada. I often find that I'm very affected by people's quality and tone of voice or whatever different energies. When I'm in a training class and the trainer is nervous and can't quite catch their breath or isn't quite breathing, I can get very irritated at them because I can't catch my breath or breathe until they start to. So I'm like, you know, I just keep praying they'll calm down soon because I sort of pick up on it and it's difficult for me to, I have to consciously try to separate it and stay out of it. But I've noticed, I don't know if anyone's ever heard Robert Kennedy Jr. speak. He has a very shaky voice that I find very difficult to listen to because I pick up this incredible nervousness. And I know from people who've heard him talk, say it's just his voice, he's not nervous. That's just his, he's got this, just, I don't know, some sort of problematic voice. And he's now on the radio, and any time he comes on, I have to switch the channel. I just can't sit with it. So, you know, I'm not sure what I'm asking, but it's like, you know, how, I guess what I'm asking is, how do you know the difference between, like, I'm picking up this nervousness, but that's not really what it is for him.
Hmm.
Although most times when I'm picking these things up, I'm very on target with it.
This is Kim, and my first question would be, does he not know that he's nervous? Is there something deeper for him?
I don't know, yeah.
Ada?
Yes?
I know what you mean, and for me, what I try to do in a situation like that, if it's the radio, you can just flip it off, you know.
Right.
But if it's somebody that's sitting in your office, or if it's somebody on the other end of the phone, or someone that you're coaching, I try to find a place of compassion inside myself that will take me beyond my feelings of discomfort.
Yeah. I'm like, for the trainer who can't catch their breath because they're nervous, I still know what that feels like because I've done a lot of training myself, so I have tremendous compassion for that. But because it's affecting my breathing, it gets me uncomfortable.
Ah, okay. So my suggestion, respectfully submitted, is that if you're feeling that way, that you work with your own...
I'm sorry, there's some noise. It's really hard to hear you all of a sudden.
Are you there?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah. I would suggest that you work with your own breathing, that this is a challenge for every empathic person to not reverberate another person's distress so that it negatively impacts you. How
mm-hmm.
do you perceive it without reverberating it or, you know, duplicating it inside your own body?
Yeah.
So if the speaker is nervous, how do you hold your own and not become nervous or breathe shallowly? And then how can you, if that person is feeling stressed or whatever, how could you send that person some love and appreciation that might help them become less nervous?
I do try to do that. I actually try to take deep breaths and try to send out a calming energy to them so that they'll calm down so I can breathe.
Yeah, other than that, I can't see anything you could do other than work with yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, work inside.
Okay.
Who else has got a burning question for Catherine?
Hey,
This is Mary. I don't have a burning question, but I have a burning comment. Catherine, I'm really inspired that you're stepping out and talking about all of this because I have a lot of experiences that are very similar to yours, and I've never been able to explain it.
It's pretty hard to...
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing a sort of mediocre job here trying to put this into words, so thanks.
Well, actually, you're doing... I think you're doing a great job putting something that's wordless into words because my experience is that it's very much a physical and a spiritual experience rather than a cognitive experience. And the piece I'm particularly drawn to knowing more about is the part around how to distinguish, if you're a really empathic person, how to distinguish between what is mine and what is the other's. And, I heard you earlier say that a lot of it is about intense self-examination
mm-hmm.
and a willingness to be really rigorous and transparent with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there are any sort of energetic exercises or boundaries that one can draw in those situations. Because I do find that's a big challenge for me, and I have no idea what to do with it. So any suggestions you have in that area would be really helpful.
Can you be a little more specific when you say it's difficult to draw an energetic boundary? Can you tell me a little more about that?
Well, when I'm in the presence of someone and I'm picking up some sort of an energy or an emotion or something, and it may be actually not mine and it's directed at me from that other person,
mm-hmm.
that I feel like sometimes the best line of defense, and not that I don't want to connect, but if I recognize that it's actually not impacting me very well, or if it's impacting me negatively, I might want to create a boundary. Not a wall, but a boundary that says, I'm not going to let this affect me anymore right now.
Say, are you saying somebody gets really mad at you?
Well, maybe it's somebody getting mad at me or somebody sort of throwing energetic darts at me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that. Or it could be unwanted sexual attraction.
Uh-huh.
So it spans the gamut.
This is such a good question, and I'm sure everyone has to deal with it in his or her own way. What I have learned to do is I opened up to it completely while holding a boundary. For instance, and we can talk about this because I think this is the most taboo thing, which is sexual energy that comes toward a practitioner from a client. And it's absolutely inappropriate to entertain that. But if you ignore it or don't talk about it or don't deal with it or shut it out, you know, put up a wall, then it's always going to be there. So if you say really clearly, I'm feeling that there's some sexual energy in the room and I just need to acknowledge it and to say that this is not something that we will ever act upon, but it's completely natural. So I try to normalize it and not engage with it directly, energetically, like join it, but make the space big enough and safe enough where it can be acknowledged without being entertained.
So you speak to it?
I do. I speak to everything that comes up in a very real way. I have to, because otherwise we don't get to the next level of honesty. And that might not work for other people. You have to be incredibly trusting of your own ability to hold anything. Now, if somebody were
violent and coming at me with a knife, I would jump. I mean, I'd move. I would just sit there and take it. But that's never happened.
Right. Yeah, this is Susan. You know, I found also, to add on to what you're saying, Catherine, one of the things that I know that's worked for me is, because I'm strongly empathic, feeling is my way about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that beyond what you're doing as well, letting those emotions or those, what I'm feeling pass through me rather than get stuck within me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So allowing it to move through if it needs to, and you taking what needs to be taken and letting it move through me, but don't let it, don't take it on, don't take it personally, but more letting it flow through me. I don't know if that answers your question, Mary. It's, again, it's not as cognitive. How to describe the letting it flow through you, but that's a process that's really helped me as well.
Yeah, and you're speaking a language that I'm familiar with, and it's the doing of letting it move through that I find sometimes really easy and other times kind of challenging.
Hmm.
So,
I'm just curious, what's challenging about it?
Well, sometimes my experience is that something might get stuck in me that's not mine. That I actually might start experiencing another person's emotions. I mean, Catherine, you spoke to this earlier, where a person who is enraged will, you know, I'll be in that person's space for a while, and then later on at night I might be in this really funky, wacky, enraged, crying mood.
Uh-huh.
So so when you say allowing something like that to move through you, I'm not really sure I know how to do that. I think I just blended two ideas.
No, well, yeah, this is the challenge of every empathic person who's working with other people, or even some people are so porous and empathic, they become very... they isolate. They become like hermits. You know, they can't take being in the world is too painful for them because everyone's feelings become their feelings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it takes. You know what? It's like Tai Chi or some kind of martial art in a way. It really takes a commitment to that inner dance where the energy comes in and you see it and you recognize that it's not yours, but in a way it is yours because we're all connected, and you don't let it stick on you or in you. And you have to be really vigilant and clear, and not in a way that's draining, but you have to be alert.
Yeah, this is Susan. You know, Catherine, I'd love to add on to what you're saying. It's like what I hear you saying is discipline, like continue to be vigilant about what I always think of that as discipline. For me, what helped me was, because I was one of those people who started to isolate until I figured out how to manage it, is to, you know, discipline of, okay, I sense that energy, let it go, continuing to discipline myself with it. And I think there's one other thing you said earlier, Catherine, that's really important, is that breath work. Because I know one thing I do is when I notice I've got someone's energy inside me, is I'll start to, like, really work in some breath work, and I actually almost, like, blow them out. Blow their energy out of my system. So
it's really important for me to have time alone every day just to feel my own clear self.
Yep. And I notice that we're getting near the end of our time. I'm sorry to cut us off, Catherine. Mary, I hope we've given you a little more clue.
Yeah, that's great. Very helpful, and I don't think it's possible to get it all in 1 hour.
Well, I thank everyone who's still here for listening, and I really appreciated having this opportunity to speak.
Yes, Catherine, I want to thank you for your willingness to engage in this dialogue. This has been, I know, invaluable for me. And I'm actually wondering, is there any way, if there's somebody here who's interested in being in touch with you, is there a way that we can direct them to you?
Yes, they can have my phone number.
Okay.
It's 650-599-3650.
And, Catherine, I just need to let you know that we've recorded this call, so I can't verify the phone number you gave out. There may be other people who are not on the call who may call you. Just need to let you know that.
That's fine.
Just so you know.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is it possible?
Catherine? Yes. Do you have an email also?
I do.
Is it possible to contact you through email?
Yes. Yes. It is Clear Eye,
ClearEye,
mm-hmm. @ earthlink.net.
Yay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Catherine. And for the rest of the niche who's here, I just do want to make a quick announcement that for next month's call, we'll be talking about intuition and money. We'll be joined by Shel Tane, a sensible coach, and she'll be talking to us about intuition and money. We're going to post that call in the next few days, so please sign up early if you want to attend. These calls have been well attended, and I want to acknowledge this group for doing that. Everybody steps forward and gets on the calls, and it's been really exciting to witness that. So thanks, everybody. Susan, Kim, you guys have anything to say as we wrap up?
Nope, just thanks for everyone for being here, and thanks again, Catherine, for being our speaker. It was really great.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I look forward to connecting with everybody on our next call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you, everybody.
Goodbye.